This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, last night's Emmys showcased Hollywood's obsession with President Trump. What's driving their fanaticism? Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com, joins me in just a moment. And the second man arrested by British authorities in the subway bombing in London is a 21-year-old Syrian refugee. Will this bring a new focus on immigration and resettlement in this country? Texas Congressman Ted Poe joins us on this edition of Washington Watch. And Senator Dianne Feinstein is in apparent damage control mode after her recent display of religious intolerance in the Senate Judiciary Committee. We'll talk about it here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. Let me remind you, coming up, the Values Voter Summit in October. You won't want to miss it. Find out more. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Great lineup of speakers. It is a chance for you to connect with conservatives around the country. Again, that's coming up just around the corner. It's the premier event for conservatives, and you will not want to miss this year's Values Voter Summit. We'll be talking more about that as the as it approaches. It is October 12th, 13th, and 14th. Find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, last night on CBS, they had the 69th Primetime Emmy Awards, hosted by Stephen Colbert. A night intended to honor Hollywood actors and the best of television, which, you know, I'm not sure what's so good about it to celebrate, but nonetheless. But it felt more like a Democratic convention, making jabs at President Trump at every opportunity. I mean, it was just a jab Trump fest. Joining us now is Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com. Terry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
All right, is it just my perception, or is Hollywood obsessed with President Trump?
I think they are obsessed with President Trump, and I think it's a function of their obsession with political correctness. They all have to prove that they have exactly the same point of view. It's the entry fee to their industry. If you believe in conservative values and want to advance them, you're not welcome there. And they believe that's what Trump represents at this point, so they have to attack him.
I find this extremely fascinating because Donald Trump, I mean, Apprentice, I mean, he had all these TV shows. I mean, he would be described, in my view, as more of the, you know, the cultural elite. I mean, he was in those circles. I have to believe that this is all about his policies and what he has been pushing and promoting and trying to accomplish as president. This is driving them crazy.
Without question. It's about the policies he got elected on, and that they still fear that he might follow through on. I agree. I think that, you know, if you looked at President Trump a few years ago culturally, you would have thought this guy is much closer to the Hollywood elite and his values and where he's coming from than to the conservative movement. But he ran for president calling for things they don't like. For example, he ran as a pro-lifer. He nominated Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. He called for controlling the borders of the United States, for enforcing the immigration law, for actually cutting people's taxes. All these things are unacceptable to people who want to be part of the establishment in Hollywood, and they still fear that Trump might follow through on those things.
Do you think part of it, and this is not just Hollywood responding this way, I mean, it's all of the left. I mean, they just appear to be unhinged. Is it that they never anticipated Donald Trump actually following through, or at least trying to follow through on those campaign promises?
You know, I don't know. I think that I suspect, just like a lot of conservatives were hopeful and confident that President Trump would follow through on his campaign promises when he was inaugurated, I think that there was a lot of liberals who feared that he might. And I think right now there's a struggle over which way President Trump is going to go. And you see some of them trying to push him into you know, into more deals with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi down the road as conservatives try and pull him back towards those campaign commitments he made.
I think that there has to be an element of surprise because, generally speaking, the politicians begin to fudge on their commitments immediately after their election. And I'm talking about Republicans in particular. I mean, they start moderating, and he's not really moderated.
Well, I think that phenomena is at the heart of why Donald Trump was elected president. People have seen it for years and years and years that they elect someone to office, it's particularly to Congress, who's made commitments to them about what they're going to fight for and stand for when they come to Washington. They get here and the half-life isn't very long. You know, usually by the end of three terms, congressmen are not fighting for what they're elected for. Sometimes it's a lot faster than that. And when President Trump, as a candidate, was talking about draining the swamp, I think that's what people believed he was talking about, going to Washington and actually following through on the commitments you make as a candidate and that the Republican Party had made to voters in prior elections, getting those things done so there's actually some follow-through on those, on generations, actually, of campaign promises.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Monday afternoon. Hope you had a great weekend. My guest, Terry Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com, talking about last night's Emmys. We look at what's happening in the NFL. I mean, now we've seen even this weekend NFL players taking their protest onto the fields, continuing to not stand for the national anthem. And the NFL, their viewers, they're declining in viewers. Their revenue is declining. I mean, is that what's next for Hollywood? I mean, do they not see that they might be maybe shooting themselves in the foot, alienating themselves from the majority of Americans?
You know, I think they are, Tony, and I think there's a definite parallel between what's happening in the NFL, at least in those isolated incidents that you mentioned, and what's happening in Hollywood. And that really, I believe, both entertainment and football ought to be aimed at the same thing, which is promoting virtue. In fact, I think, you know, when you look at great art critics and great critics of drama, what they've pointed out is a great play or a great drama, ultimately, through entertaining people and by therefore grabbing their attention, and by moving their emotions, they move them to virtue. That's what Shakespeare's plays did. I think Hollywood plays do the Hollywood's production of drama now does the absolute opposite. It tries to move people to vice. When you talk about football, why do kids play football? They play football to learn discipline and values that can serve them through their entire life, and that they actually learn on the practice field at their high school or their college and on the playing field when they're in games. And I think that that's one of the reasons in the United States of America so many people have looked up to football players as role models. And it's also because football is a true meritocracy. So I think, you know, the liberals don't like football for that reason, but now we have a handful of malcontents who want to complain about the United States of America and use the football field that they have the privilege to be on as the platform for doing that. I don't think that they can corrupt football the way they've corrupted Hollywood, but I think that conservatives need to stand up for the real role of the entertainment industry in our country, which is to promote the truth and virtue, and for the real role of football, which is exactly the same thing.
Well, folks, we're talking about something I really never really talk about because I really don't care for sports or Hollywood. But I think there's something much deeper here, and that's why I wanted Terry on. He's a longtime political analyst as well as a reporter in Washington. But Terry, when I see how Hollywood is reacting yesterday, again, in the Emmys, the way they just, it was a fixation with Donald Trump. And so anytime people act in a way that is just abnormal, you have to think, all right, what's behind this? What is causing someone to act irrational? And I think Hollywood's reaction is irrational, which you bring that back around, and I know a lot of conservatives, rightfully so, are discontent with what's happening in Washington, D.C., especially with Congress. But I would have to say that their reaction to Donald Trump suggests to us that he's on the right path, therefore we need to be supportive of what he's trying to do.
I think they absolutely fear that he's on the right path. I do believe what happened yesterday at the Emmys represents two things. One is that they fear Donald Trump and that he might take America in the right direction, and away from those agenda things they'd like to be achieved. And on the other side, it's them, part of the Hollywood elite, showing solidarity with each other. Each one of those people going up on the stage and going after the president is actually saying, hey, I'm with you, to the people in that Hollywood establishment. So I think both those things were going on last night.
Terry, Jeffrey, when Bill Clinton was, when his terms were up and we saw George W. Bush elected. Now, he didn't, honestly, I don't think George W. Bush did a whole lot of reversal of Clinton policies, although there were some. There clearly were some. I didn't see the visceral reaction to him the way we see to Donald Trump. Was there a sense that after 8 years of Barack Obama and how hard he pushed to the left, that there's now a sense of almost entitlement, that a leader has to lead with liberal ideas and ideology, and that there's some kind of, they never thought it would be taken away from them?
Well, I think that's right. I also think that, you know, President Trump is a unique personality. George W. Bush was the second-generation president and was part of a different popular culture than Donald Trump. And I do think that they, you know, a third thing that was going on last night is they realized Donald Trump is an entertaining force. People are very interested in this person who is the president of the United States. And, you know, but it also is interesting, Tony, that I think the last time you saw the liberal elite in this country react to a president as viscerally as they've reacted to Trump is when an actor was elected president, when Ronald Reagan was president of the United States. And so I do think some of that is a fear that Trump is such a unique person, seems like such an independent individual, that he might actually follow through on the things he promised to do, and that would be devastating to them. And clearly, the more he tries to do it, the more they are going to fight him. So that if President Trump, I believe, could be a great president if he follows through and achieves his promises. And but if he's going to do that, he has a heck of a fight in front of him.
And I think he has to ignore the taunting and the mocking that the left is doing, which he sometimes has a difficult time doing.
Yes.
Terry, Jeffrey, as always, great to have you on the program. And again, I think this is fascinating, and we can learn a lot about where America is headed based upon the way the left is responding. So thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tony.
Terry Jeffrey with CNS News. To find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. As I said, they're a great source of information. They do not get any kind of government money. They're all privately funded, and they delve into the issues from a conservative perspective. But not only that, they do genuine journalism, which is hard to find these days. I do think, folks, that we should take notice of the way the left is responding. Those who are opposing the president would suggest to me that they're afraid they have a lot to lose, and that is losing the reins of government that has been used to really bash. I mean, under Obama, it's been used to bash conservatives. All right, when we come back, Congressman Ted Poe of Texas joins us to talk about immigration resettlement here in the United States. Could the latest revelations on the terrorist attack in England change things here? That's next on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? Our founding fathers knew that God's transcendent truth must be the foundation for all law. Since the early 20th century, however, truth-based rule of law has changed dramatically in America. The progressive era ushered in big change, shifting our standards to make it appear that truth is ever-evolving. America's founding fathers determined truth from a fixed source, God. But progressives determined that truth originated with man, thereby making it possible to change the truth in order to fit shifting cultural opinions and to undergird the power of those elected in office. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston reveals the importance of truth founded in God and the consequences of moral relativism. Is truth fixed or is it subject to change? The future existence of our free democracy hinges on answering this question correctly. Go to frc.org/decay to learn more.
In America, we face a media onslaught against the Christian perspective. It is now seen as anti-cultural and invalid. Dr. Michael Paulson, a law professor at the University of St. Thomas, talked about how Christians can respond intellectually. Dr. Paulson has researched common arguments against religious liberty. For example, religious values are no different than ethical values. Dr. Paulson argues that the law should give religious exemptions because of the perspective of a religious person who necessarily believes in God as an ultimate source. Religion is different and necessitates a different kind of devotion. Moreover, the Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom of exercise. The Christian perspective is one that is not outdated, but still present and still valid according to the Constitution. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discussed the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back. This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, as we spoke about briefly on Friday, and I'm sure you've tracked the news over the weekend, but London was the site of yet another terrorist attack, a bucket bomb. Two men are accused of planting the bomb in a bucket on the subway, the tube, during the rush hour commute on Friday. Now, they've made two arrests. The second man was a Syrian refugee who came into the country. Is this yet more evidence of a painful truth? The Islamification of the United Kingdom in Europe is well underway, and their lax immigration policies have aided that. And what lessons can we learn here in the United States, and will this affect how we approach this issue? With us now is Congressman Ted Poe. He represents the 2nd Congressional District of Texas and serves on the House Committee on Foreign Affairs and the House Committee on the Judiciary. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Well, and I'm sure you've been tracking this issue. Yet another refugee committing an act of terrorism in Europe. Is this going to draw new emphasis to that issue here in terms of resettlement and immigration in our country?
Well, I certainly hope so. The individual that was brought into or taken into Great Britain, as you said, was a Syrian refugee. The other one was from Iraq. And I don't know why countries want to bring this trouble on themselves and take that chance. So Great Britain's answer is not to stem the tide of refugees, but to go after social media and also education programs. That's their two responses for this recent attack. I would hope the United States just sees the obvious. Why should we take a greater risk by bringing in people who may have a tendency to be radicalized and cause harm among us? I don't think we should take that chance. We shouldn't take that chance with the lives of American citizens. And so I hope that our Department of Homeland Security sees this. I believe President Trump does. He has been trying, in spite of the courts, to try to stem the tide of people coming into the United States that are from certain countries, whether they be refugees or whether they be from one of the six the countries that he has tried to keep people from coming in because they can't be vetted. And I hope that we learn the lessons that obviously the Europeans have not learned.
I mean, I agree with you, Congressman Poe. I think this should validate the steps that this administration, this president, has taken to provide for greater security for Americans. I mean, there's a pattern here. We're seeing this over and over in Europe, and it's being traced back to the lax immigration policies that that Europe has. And it's just a matter of time till we see a proliferation of that here.
You're exactly correct. And my concern, one of my concerns, is that the Europeans are getting used to this. They may be believing, well, oh, that's just the way it is. That's just what happens. And they're going to have a sense that, well, we just have to tolerate this type of activity by refugees who come into the United States or come into Europe. That's a wrong attitude. Acceptance of this type of criminal activity is not the answer. In fact, they should be more outraged each time this happens and demand of their own governments that their governments do something about this lax refugee policy that they have.
You know, Congressman Poe, it sounds like a parallel where in Europe with this these terrorist attacks by the these radical Islamists, they want to control social media. It almost sounds very similar to the left here in this country wanting more gun control to address gun violence. But we have found in places like Chicago, making it very evident that that doesn't work.
Well, that's a good analogy. It is true. The social media may help to radicalize some of these individuals, but I believe they would be radicalized anyway. It is not social media's fault that people commit terrorist acts. It is the individual's fault that they commit terrorist acts.
Do you envision Congress weighing in any more on this to be proactive in? I know the House has been very supportive of the president, the Senate not so much so, but I would think that the weight of evidence is beginning to stack up now that people are going to be, I would hope, be held responsible if we are not proactive in moving forward to protect Americans from such attacks.
The question is, how many more of these attacks does Europe have to have before we get the message in the United States? Our goal should be the protection of Americans and people living in the United States. The goal should not be to bring in refugees into the United States at a security risk to Americans and people that live here. So the responsibility of government is to protect the people. It is not the responsibility of government to take actions that make it riskier for Americans' safety. And so we're getting our priorities mixed up. We may have a tendency to get our priorities mixed up unless we understand what is happening in Europe, that these terrorist attacks, one after the other, ISIS claims responsibility for, and what happens, we learn. And no surprise to anyone that these folks, in many cases, are refugees from Syria.
Congressman, we're up against a break here, and I want to ask you one final question. Can you hang over for 2 minutes on the break?
Sure.
Yeah, I want to ask you, this issue is related to border security in this country because so many of those who come across the border are what are described as other than Mexican. I want to talk about that so people realize that this is connected to the president's effort to secure the border with border wall fence. And so if you'll hang around, we'll talk about that when we come back. Folks, you're listening to Washington Watch. Congressman Ted Poe of Texas, good friend of the program, is on talking about what happened in London and the lessons that we need to learn. There's a pattern emerging here. I mean, how long do we have to sit here and watch this before we are proactive? We're going to talk about that, and then still more to come. Dianne Feinstein and her display of religious intolerance. She's on the defense. We're going to talk about that here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Folks, you're listening to Washington Watch, TonyPerkins.com, the website. If you miss anything on your way home this afternoon, it's all archived there at TonyPerkins.com. And by the way, lots of information there coming up in April the 17th. We're going to be taking our second tour to Israel, and you can come along. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Congressman Ted Poe is still with us. Congressman, thanks for holding over on the break there. As I was saying on our way out, you know, when the president is talking about securing our southern border and building, you know, the wall, now it's not all a wall, part of it's fence, but anyway, the wall, this is not, as some like to portray, like an anti-Hispanic thing, because there are a lot of folks, in fact, I'm not sure the percentages, but it could be half or more of those coming near that, coming across the border, that are not from Hispanic, other what they call OTMs, other than Mexicans, that and many of them with ties to Islamic countries. Am I correct?
That's right. The word OTM, other than Mexican, is a legal term that is used in the federal government to mean other than Mexican nationals. About half are OTMs, other than Mexican nationals. So that means they're coming from where? Coming from all over the world. And many of for South America, Central America, Europe, the Middle East, all over the world. In fact, when I was down at the border recently, Border Patrol had apprehended three folks from Ukraine who were illegally crossing into the United States. I mean, how did the Ukrainians ever find Texas was my question. But anyway, so
they heard about that Tex-Mex food.
But everybody in the world knows that the southern border of the United States is not secure. So they come if they want to get in to for whatever reason, whether it's a reason that's lawful or unlawful, crossing in the United States illegally is something that is easy to do, and people in the whole world know that. bad guys, whether they are would-be terrorists or whether they are criminal gangs or whether they are the drug cartels. All those folks know you want to get to the United States, cross the southern border. But I think we're doing a disservice to Mexico, really, if we assume wrongfully that all those folks crossing into the United States illegally are from Mexico. That is just not true. In fact, the Chinese have a big operation where they're bringing folks in. People from China come in South Texas. They have a whole system down in South Texas where people are coming in across the border illegally.
What have we seen in the, the first 8 months of the Trump administration? Have we've seen a fairly significant decline, have we not, in those crossing over the border?
No question about it. One reason is because the people know that there is going to be more border security, but the laws that are on the books are being enforced now by the Border Patrol. The catch and release program is basically over with, where people are apprehended and they're just told, well, go back across the border and we'll let you go. That catch and release program has ended, but there's more legislation down the pike for border security, and it's an all of the above approach. There will be a wall or some fencing. I call it a barrier. There will be more boats in the water, more boots on the ground, because the Rio Grande River is the border with Texas and Mexico. So we have boats in the water. We'll have more individuals, helicopters, aerostats. Those are the small blimps. There will be fiber optics that can be used. That's a small line that can be buried along the border, and it's so improved that we can tell whether it's a bullet that crosses or a person or a coyote or a plane in the air or a vehicle, and then that could be apprehended by the Border Patrol. There's cameras. So more and more of that is being financed by Congress and appropriated by Congress. People know that. That is one reason why the illegal crossings into the United States have dropped.
Let me ask you one final question, Congressman Poe. When you, and I know this is hard to quantify statistically, but based on those that you've interacted with on the border and cases that have been made with those who have come illegal, I mean, they're all coming illegally, but what percentage do we estimate are coming for nefarious purposes to actually engage in criminal activity?
I don't know the exact number, but the drug cartels and the criminal gangs and would-be criminals across border crimes, that is the reason many people do cross. The biggest culprits, of course, are the drug cartels and the criminal gangs. The human trafficking is all because the border is lax. And we're talking about people being smuggled into the United States for labor trafficking and sex slavery. That's because we have wide-open borders. I can't give you the exact number, but it's a good percentage of those coming in are criminals, violate the law when they get here.
It seems like to me, Congressman, the humanitarian thing to do would be to secure the border for both those who are being brought over and for the people primarily here in this country.
Well, no question about it. You're absolutely correct. That's very logical. It is the humanitarian thing to do. It's both humanitarian thing to do, as you said, for people that are being smuggled into the United States, and it's also the humanitarian thing to do for Americans.
Yeah. Congressman Ted Poe, as always, great to talk with you, my friend. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Folks, don't go away. We're coming back on the other side of this break. We're going to talk about Dianne Feinstein for a moment and her recent tirade against religion. That's next. Don't go away.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discussed the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I feel like I'm doing midnight radio there with that music. All right. Dianne Feinstein, California senator, kind of put on display a textbook case of religious intolerance recently when one of President Trump's nominees were before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Amy Barrett, who is, she's nominated to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, and this occurred last week. Anyway, here's a clip of what Senator Feinstein had to say in grilling Barrett before the committee.
Why is it that so many of us on this side have this very uncomfortable feeling that, you know, dogma and law are two different things? And I think whatever a religion is, it has its own dogma. The law is totally different. And I think in your case, Professor, when you read your speeches, the conclusion one draws is that the dogma lives loudly within you. And that's of concern when you come to big issues that large numbers of people have fought for years in this country. I assume if both of you were on the lists, that you would be a no vote on Roe. And that puts a number of us, just very honestly, in layman's language, in a very difficult position.
Well, Senator, in layman's language, the dogma lives loudly within you. I mean, think about this for a moment. I mean, what is the dogma that she was making reference to? The dogma was the fact that Ms. Barrett was Catholic and her writings reflected a pro-life position, a natural law position. Unbelievable. And, of course, you add that with Bernie Sanders, who went on the a tear against Russell Voigt, who was nominated by the president to be in his budget team. And I mean, it all adds up to religious intolerance. Now, because so many people have really cried foul over this. In fact, we've got a petition. You can actually sign it, TonyPerkins.com, calling for a stop to this religious bigotry. Feinstein has kind of been in damage control mode. She was this weekend. She was on CNN's State of the Union, and this is what she said. She said, quote, "I'm a product of Catholic education. I sat in doctrine classes for 4 years, for 5 days a week. I think that Catholicism is a great religion. I have great respect for it." She went on to say, "I've known many of the archbishops who have been in my community. We've had dinner together. We've spoken together over many, many decades, and I've tried to be helpful to the church whenever I could." Wow. If you would describe what she's doing as helpful, I would hate for her to be not helpful. Let me tell you what's behind this, folks. All right, there is increasingly on the left a, you know, I'm talking about, yes, the left, the trumpeters of tolerance. Okay, yes, those are the same people. There is an unbelievable intolerance toward Orthodox Christian religion. But there's more behind this. The courts, as the left, Nancy Pelosi made reference to a few months back about they wouldn't have been able to accomplish anything had it not been for the courts when it comes to the redefinition of marriage and the declaring of open season on unborn children. And as I was talking with Terry Jeffrey earlier, Obama pushed the envelope so far to the left. And there was this expectation that they had the momentum and the big mo, and they were moving leftward. The progressives were going to dominate into the future. When President Obama entered the Oval Office, liberal judges controlled just one of the 13 circuits of the U.S. Court of Appeals. All right, just one. All right, during his 8 years and 55 successful nominations, liberal majorities now control nine of the 13. That's 70%. More than one-third of the 179 judges on federal appeals courts owe their seats to President Obama. Now, back to Feinstein. She went on to say that, lament the fact that Ms. Bartlett was a law professor, that this was really not about her religion. She went on to say that this was about the fact that she she's not been a judge. She's been writing about the law as to suggest that she was not qualified. Okay. Well, let's look at some of President Obama's nominees. I wonder if she raised the same issue with Gerald Lynch, who was vice dean at American Law Institute at Columbia. Andre Davis, assistant professor at the University of Maryland Law School. What about Scott Matheson, Jr., professor and dean at the Law School, University of Utah? What about Stephen Higginson, who was professor at Loyola University in New Orleans College of Law? Were they not qualified because they were professors? No, they were liberal professors, so they were qualified. The liberal dogma lived within them, and the liberal dogma is okay. We've seen also there have been some qualified conservative attorneys, constitutional attorneys appointed, that have been associated with institutions like First Liberty, a religious liberty organization that actually works with some of the most prominent and proficient attorneys in America. And that association has been questioned by some on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Well, I wonder if those same issues were raised about Clinton nominees like Diane Wood, who was with Planned Parenthood, or Obama nominees, David Hamilton, who was with the Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, Morgan Kirsten, who was with Planned Parenthood, and others who were associated with liberal activist organizations who were all confirmed to the courts. Look, I go back to what we were talking about at the very beginning with Terry Jeffrey and how Hollywood has been reacting to President Trump. And this, I can only describe it as a fixation, obsession. I mean, they're obsessed with President Trump. It's because of the policy. It's not the individual. Now, I do think that they think they can goad him, and he has proven that he watches TV and he responds, and hopefully he's exercising a little more self-restraint in that sense. And, you know, you never let these people know that they're getting to you, because then that just feeds them. But this really is about policy. It is about the direction of this country. And I wanted to emphasize that today, because do not grow weary in well-doing. Now, look, I understand President Trump is not everything that we wanted, you know, in terms of a candidate, but he became the nominee. And frankly, he has done or attempted to do just what he said he's doing. I am not disappointed with him. Now, there are things in his administration that disappoint me, but my interaction with him and what he has done, I'm not disappointed. I'm extremely disappointed in the United States Senate and Senator John McCain in particular, and other Republicans who, you know, did not, when they had the opportunity to repeal Obamacare, do it, a pledge that Republicans had been making over and over for 7 years. As well as John McCain tried to trip up the president on the policy he put forth to stop one of the last radical social policies that President Obama put into the military. That was the transgender policy. John McCain trying to team up with Democrats to undo it. I can't figure him out. I really can't. This I can figure out. It's clear the left does not like the direction that President Trump is taking the country. And folks, be very simplistic about it. If Hollywood doesn't like it, it's got to be good. If Hollywood is upset, you should be happy. Because how long have we lamented how Hollywood has trampled upon not just moral values, But the whole idea of America exceptionalism? I mean, there's so much anti-American, anti-family, anti-moral messages coming out of Hollywood. If they're upset with somebody, it's pretty good indication that somebody might be doing the right thing. And so I want to encourage you to continue to pray for the president and continue to be supportive. Even though the media is trying to discourage, to depress conservatives and the president's support base, although polling shows that those who supported President Trump and helped him get elected, evangelicals in particular, they remain supportive. So don't be hoodwinked by the media. And certainly don't allow yourself to be hoodwinked by Hollywood. We've got to stay focused on the objective here. And the focus is to try to undo as much of the destructive policies put in place by Barack Obama that undermined the family, that undermined traditional values, and restore as much as of that as we possibly can. Now, that's a battle, and that battle is raging each and every day. But look, the president, and I go back to the issue of the transgender policy that he has given instruction to the military to do, that was a bold step. Very few politicians have been willing to stand up and call what is asinine, asinine. And that's crazy. I mean, if you look at the whole thing, the cost that would be to the military, undermining of military readiness, morale, unit cohesion, I mean, you name it. It is just, it's insane. And the president said as much in his tweets. Now, there's people in his administration, typical politicians, that are trying to, you know, walk that back and modify it and moderate it. But the president's been sticking to his gun. So I encourage you to not be distracted by what so many are trying to do, and that is to stop this president. Now, I do we will continue to hold this administration, as we do with all administrations, accountable. But the reality is, this president, I think, is doing his very best to keep the commitments that he made to voters that got him elected. Now, I did want to mention this by way of information, and we may follow up later this week. There is another chance to repeal Obamacare. It has to happen by September the 30th, so the clock is ticking. Not a whole lot of time left. But Senator Lindsey Graham and Bill Cassidy, this is kind of the, they've teamed up with a new plan to basically block grant the money that would go into Obamacare. So it does away with a lot of the more onerous aspects of Obamacare. It will also remove the lion's share of money going to organizations like Planned Parenthood, and it will protect, through Hyde-type language, taxpayers from being forced into funding abortion. So we are supportive of it. We have come out publicly in support of it. The president is supporting it. The Senate Majority Leader, who is, I think, really on the ropes because he's not been able to get anything done, Mitch McConnell, is supportive. Well, saying if they get 50 votes, he will bring it up for a vote. I hope they can do it. I really do think the Republicans, their future is on the line with this. For 7 years, they promised to do it. And now they've gained the House over it, they gained the Senate over it, and they now have the White House. It's time for them to deliver on this. Encourage your senator to support it. It's the Graham-Cassidy healthcare bill. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us today. Great to talk with you. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.